Blog Talk Radio.
I wasn't going to be able to cut that music off there for a little bit. So, Dorothy, you got some hot topics?
Yes, I sure do, Miss Hattie. How are everyone doing today?
Great.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about my little town today, Mississippi. But also I'm going to talk about violence in the black community. We got to do more in our community. There was a story last week. They laid a wife and mother to rest. It was a murder-suicide. The husband killed the wife, and they buried the wife this weekend. Then also, he killed her really because they said she was cheating. I'm going to put that out there. Then also, a young man, they buried the wife. So this week, they're coming up this Saturday, they're going to bury the father, the husband. To make a long story short, what happened was a young man came in from the military to come in for the wife's funeral and be the pallbearer for the husband. The young man was killed Saturday, and it may have been Sunday. But he was killed. He came in from the army. And they said it all started with a Facebook post where somebody was arguing over DNA testing who the baby belongs to. But the young man that came in from the army was an innocent bystander. He stood up when the young boys began to fight, young men began to fight. They said a young man from the army stood up and broke him up and told him, don't do that. Don't do this. Don't y'all do this. No, he was killed Labor Day. Yeah. So he told them, don't do this, don't do that. And he broke the fight up. Everybody thought the fight was over. Everybody went on their merry way. They came back. Three boys came back and did a drive-by and shot this young man and two other people. And the one they was trying to kill, they weren't trying to kill this young man that broke the fight up. They was trying to kill the man that that was at the scene of the fight. But to make a long story short, we worry about sending our kids to the military. Talking about don't send them to the military because they're going to get killed in the military. What are we going to do about them getting killed here in their own country? It's time for us in our community to stand up. It's time. What are we going to do about black violence, black crime on black crime? What are we going to do? I need to see. You know what? I got mad last week when I saw the lady was saying, talking about black life, don't do enough for the community, not advocating against the violence in the community. But we got to do something. Do anybody have a suggestion? What can we do? Why are our kids so violent? Why are the kids today cannot solve a problem without pulling a gun? Why? Why they cannot
because
solve
the model.
This?
That's the model that they have in America. That's the model they have with military might. That's the model. The world is violent. And so they are a reflection of the world. They are reflecting on the movies they see, and I think they are reflecting on what this country does all over the world.
Exactly.
And let me get my other hot topic in real fast, and then we'll go to that one more, and then I'm going to let y'all talk. We got another hot topic, and this one is kind of dear to my heart. I used to be a minister wife. For 21 years, there was a minister that had a very, very large congregation. And this is the saddest part of all. The congregation went along with this mess. This man saw a young girl at the church that was 14 years old. He says her body was so fine. This is what the preacher says. Her body was so fine, he was fascinated with her body. The preacher wanted this young girl. The preacher told the young girl, he had a lot of social workers in his church. This is a true story. It's on my Facebook page. He had a lot of social workers in his church. He told the young lady to lie to say her mother was abusing her. And he had a plan, and they took her from the home and placed her at the worker's home that the preacher goes to church with the preacher. And once they placed her there, the preacher began to go and pick her up and have sex with her. And she had one abortion, and then she turned around, the young 14-year-old girl got pregnant again. And the preacher tried to make her have another abortion, and she wouldn't do it. But look at the leadership. The social worker went along with the preacher and knew the preacher was raping and molesting this child. And they came up with a scheme. This is what's going on in these social work departments. People got hookups. And we also, there was an article called Headhunter that they deliberately goes around and scout cheers. This is horrible. What is going on in America? Those are my hot topics for today. But go and read the article on my Facebook page, Dorothy Dunning, D-U-N-N-I-N-G. They gave him life with no parole, but they need to let the prisoners get to him. Those are my hot topics for today.
Well, as far as regarding your second topic, the one about what the preacher did, the way I see it, that's nothing more than the kind of corruption that has existed in all societies, particularly ours, too. and that needs to be taken care of, but it needs to be taken care of on a grassroots level by the people. A lot of these problems we have, this violence problem and all that, we live in a very, very violent culture. This is a very violent culture. Guns and everything have been available to people since its inception. This is nothing new. And we have to have new values and paradigms to raise these children on. We can't continue to tap into the culture we live in, which is America, and think that somehow we're going to pull something that's positive out of this. It hasn't worked from the beginning, and it won't. It works for a small minority of our people, but the masses of our people are always going to go through this kind of stuff simply because this whole Western thing is based on a lot of Western paradigms that we don't fit. We got to understand we don't fit. I understand we've been here forever, and this is all we know, but obviously we just don't fit in this thing, and it's not because of something we don't have. It's just because of something that we are. We have to raise our children in a different way. I have problems with more of my kids, and I think I raised them decently and everything, but just the whole influence of this thing. It, almost by osmosis or something, we get inculcated with the same crazy, crazy stuff, these fools. Now our people are starting to, we used to say, we've seen some crazy thing happen in the media and everything. Well, I know that ain't no black, but it has to be a white person. It was just understood white people were crazy. And when my parents used to tell us when we were kids, when they were kids and growing up, and they seen all these horrific crimes and everything in the paper, it never was one of our people. It was always some group of white folks doing it. We didn't have that persona. We didn't have that, and we didn't do those kind of crazy things. We did crazy things, but we're not to the extent that they did. Now it's almost even bored. We do the same crazy stuff they do. That means something to me, man.
That's called integration.
Yeah, well, social integration is not going to free you. That's what we got. We were socially integrated. That's nothing either here nor there, because before we were integrated, we had everything we needed. When it was segregated, African people could take care of themselves. They could sustain themselves. They had everything within their community and whatnot. So, but socially we were integrated. We could drink at the same fountain. We could do this. We could do that. Well, that didn't change anything. That ruined what existed. So I don't think that's which is what Brother Brown continually talks about. Yeah. But I feel essentially the same way. If that didn't help at all, but still, we have to raise these kids to where they don't have those kind of influences, because it's not sustaining. Simple as that. They're killing each other. You know, they're going to jail, and it's really something. One of the things I always advocated is I never went in the military. Wouldn't even consider it, because I just didn't want to represent a country that does the kind of things they do. They might do a little good, but overall what they do, I didn't want to be a representative of that. But I don't have nothing against somebody that goes to the military. But if you go into the military, when you come back to civilian life, whatever skills and trades and whatever they taught you, you could teach your own people. That's what I feel about military. You were talking about that brother in the military. When you get something, whatever you get that's positive, you can add it, send it on within our community. We could use it, all the help and skills and expertise that we can get. That's all I have to say.
Okay. And I'm a person,
yeah.
I would like to say something, Miss Hattie, if you don't mind, right quick. You know, my pastor, it was a young lady in our church that was going to go to the military, and our pastor told her, she was a very pretty young lady, and our pastor told her, do not go to the military, the young lady. He told her to go to college. But my grandson wants to go to the military, and I'm going to do everything in my power to help my grandson get there. That's what he wants, and that's what he feel like he want to do. He told me this, and he keep telling me, Grandmama, that's what I want to do. Because, okay, I don't agree with everything the United States say or do. I really don't. But somebody got to fight for the country. Now, that's just my personal opinion. Somebody got to fight, because we don't. We'll be just like the war-torn peoples over there, where they all fleeing and leaving. But to make a long story short, is I already see my grandson killed fighting for his country and killed by a thug doing a drive-by.
That makes a lot of sense, dear. But you know what? The bottom line is most of the fighting that our troops do is not because the people they're fighting is some threat to our country. See, that's the whole thing. The military of this country are more, they're victims. They're more victims than anything. The people that benefit from these wars, war is a very profitable endeavor. There's a lot of money made in war. They make trillions in war, and that's why they have them. It's never because did the Vietnamese threaten to attack the United States? Did the Cubans threaten to attack the United States? Did the Grenadians threaten to attack the United States? Did the Afghanis, did any of these people, before we mess with them, do anything to us? No. I'm not against somebody going to war, but the myth that a lot of people operate under is they're fighting for our freedom, they're defending us, when they're not. They're fighting for the profits for whoever benefits from this, these corporations. Let me give you a short story here real quick. I used to work for the Defense Department of Defense in the capacity of a computer operator and a courier, and I did a lot of different things for them and whatnot. I used to have to go out to the airport and pick up people from the Pentagon and whatnot and bring them back to the office and then take them down to the defense contractors here in California and whatnot. And they, you know, talk, because a military person was over a lot of these companies. They had a government contingency in there, right? One time we went to this company that made tanks and armored personnel carriers and everything. In the back of the company, they had acres and acres of tanks and armored personnel carriers and different weapons and whatnot. They had streets made in the back of the thing. They had a simulated mountain and a lake so you could run the tanks in there and test them out and everything. I had a general from the Pentagon in the back and a captain in the front, in the back. I was driving. I was just a courier. And they're sitting there. They used to talk freely in front of me. I was a government employee. And we were driving down this long street, and on one side of it, as far as I could see, was nothing but tanks and armored personnel carriers, and on the other side, it was the same thing. And the captain who was in charge of the facility there told the general, he said, well, general, he pointed to the left, he said, to the right, he said, these are slated to go to the Arabs. We're going to sell all of these to the Arabs. And we drove a little further, it was still a long line of vehicles, and then these are all identical, same vehicle. And then he chuckled a little bit and pointed to the other side and said, oh, we're selling those to the Israelis. So they're playing both ends against the middle on this situation. And war is a profitable business. That's why there's so many wars. That's why they're always finding somebody for us to be mad at, or supposedly is our enemy. They always got some enemy. In other words, there's always a nigger. That's all that amounts to. And we're one of the enemies. Also, that's why they have a war against us. But this is what we're dealing with. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't encourage your son to go to the military, but my dear, don't think he's going there defending us. He's going there defending profits for whatever companies make money, or whoever is making money off all these wars, because most of them are not needed. And furthermore, they ain't none of our business. You know? We're not even in those areas. The world where they're fighting these wars and whatnot, man. Generally speaking, it's none of our business. It's as simple as that. But the future is they're going to be killing black people in Africa. That's the next move, because that's the richest continent on this planet, and that's where everything is there you need is there. And they're already in there with AFRICOM, so that's going to be the next move. Now, these black soldiers, or African soldiers in America, are going to have to make a decision. Am I going to go to Africa and kill Africans the way they're killing them in Asia and South Asia, which is the so-called Middle East, West Asia, the Middle East. There's no such place as the Middle East. That's the western tip of Asia. Let's call it West Asia. They're killing people all over the world. Well, they're going to be doing that in Africa on a large scale, too, because a lot of African republics are standing up and saying, hey, we don't care what you're saying. We're developing. We ain't going to let you tell us what to do. Go jump in the lake. So they're there and whatnot. So that's going to be the next frontier for them. So what are these brothers and sisters going to do when they're in the military thinking they're defending their own country, killing people in Africa? That's what I want to know.
So what do you think
there? We'll have to see about that when it happens. It's kind of hard to speculate about that sort of thing. I do know that I shared a house with this guy who had been in Vietnam. I met him in Berkeley, and we shared a house in Berkeley. he was like from an Irish gangster family. He's a very violent person. I'm lucky that there was never any violence between me and him, but he's one of the few white people you meet who is perfectly open about race relations. And there were two wars going on in Vietnam. There was a race war between the black and white soldiers, and there was the war against the Vietnamese. And he described any number of instances where black and white soldiers were beating the hell out of each other, where this black soldier killed a sergeant for taunting him, and all you have to do is look at the history of black soldiers in World War II, the Korean War. There was a black man, and I think he eventually got his Medal of Honor from some president, one of the Bushes or something like that, but he had performed this tremendously heroic action, you know, saving all these American soldiers and killing all these Korean soldiers. And when it was time to divvy up the medals to determine who got what, it was openly known that he did this, but the powers that be, they said the Medal of Honor isn't for black people. That's not for black soldiers. It doesn't even apply. And you're dealing with an arch-conservative element of our government. I'll just tell you this story briefly. There's a man here, he's probably deceased now, black man, the very famous Republican entrepreneur. He had the food concession for Leavenworth Prison and Leavenworth Military Base, and his daughter worked in my office. They were real rich and famous also in black entrepreneur, these papers, and so on. But in any case, he got a contract. This is in the Gulf War under the first Bush. He got a contract to supply some tremendous number of military personnel with bologna sandwiches, okay? Now, he would have two pieces of dry white bread, one slice of bologna, And he's producing like hundreds of thousands of these things at a time and selling them to the military for $3 a piece. It probably cost him, I doubt that it cost him a nickel to make those. Can you imagine? $3 a piece to the military. But my sister, who had a lot of personal problems, my mother died when my sister was young, like just out of high school, and my uncle convinced her to go into the military. She went into the Air Force, and she did real well at some training center in Mississippi, I believe.
It was probably Keesler Air Force Base.
Well, yeah, they had some kind of academy there, and she graduated in the top 10th percentile, and she traveled all over the world during doing administrative stuff for the military, and it was exactly what she needed. She has a great life. She was... She worked in the Pentagon for numerous years, much longer. I think that they have a limit, supposedly, of 3 years or something normally in the Pentagon, working in the Pentagon, but somehow she was there for over 10 years. And then she got out and has a GI Bill, and she was able to get a nice house. But the key is that anybody going into the military needs to make sure whatever they're going to do, they're not going to be in combat. You know, I don't know what, did you say this is your nephew?
My grandson. He wants to go.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I got a grandson and a nephew. And I mean, and they hard as set on it. And then I have another granddaughter. She just signed up for 8 years. She already signed up. And she goes this year, time school is out. She automatically leaves.
That's because a lot of these kids don't have too much other opportunity in this country because ain't nothing happening. The military affords, like David said, they all afford a tremendous amount of opportunity if you apply yourself. That's why. So it can be good, but like he said, you got to watch what you're going to be doing. And don't think whatever you're doing, you're doing it for the benefit of the country, because that's kind of nebulous. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, well, that's the key. She, of course, she's a female, but anybody going into the military, especially black people who are trying to advance themselves, you need to have a clear idea as to what your options are and what you need to bring to the table to qualify to get in an administrative line. Only for every soldier in combat, there's 10 support people backing them up. You need to make sure you're one of these people. And you can get skills, you know, that are in fact, you know, transferable in civilian life. If you're just a regular combat soldier, you're not going to get anything. If you get back in one piece, you're not qualified to do anything.
They become cops.
And there's
a
lot
cops,
of people,
David.
Who,
they become cops. That's who the police forces are in this country.
I know. Well, that's not much of a job either.
I know, but I'm saying
a lot of
these
cops don't make any money. They're making in the 20s and low 30s. These deputies in these small towns, sheriff deputies, a lot of them don't make over $30,000 a year. I mean, you have to be there for 5 years to make that. You know, they're low paying jobs. But
it's
nevertheless,
not a good job, but I'm saying,
aside
what they,
from which,
the vet too, you know.
Yeah, well, there's a lot who don't do. There's a lot more vets than there are cops. And
yeah.
My sister certainly isn't doing that. She was able to get a top secret security clearance, and she could make in the mid-70s doing anything. That's what people with top secret security clearances make in the civilian world. That's my advice about that. But any company, the average company that gets a military contract, their profits increase by 600%. And the reason why we jumped into Afghanistan is because the Russians had been there for something like 15 years conducting a brutal military operations against these people, and it got nowhere with them. They left. As soon as they left, you know, Bush has us, you know, right in there making that money. That's exactly what they were looking for. You know, I mean, that's ideal. Now this, they're talking about Afghanistan as the longest war in the history of this country. That's exactly what they wanted. And you know, I promise you, if you talk to 10 people on the street and ask them what we've accomplished and why we're in Afghanistan to begin with, they probably couldn't tell you. And in terms of what we've accomplished, we haven't accomplished a damn thing. The Taliban is doing its thing as usual. Those people will fight to the last infant. That's all they've ever been doing over there. It's one of the most miserable places in the world. I mean, it's one of the few places that looking at pictures of it is horrifying. Just barren, rocky mountains. You know, in very, very poor soil, the main export is heroin and opium poppies. In any case, as to your other issue about violence, as I said before, I think a lot of the violence that we see in our youth comes from the fact that they're being abused at home, getting the living crap beat out of them because that's the way their parents grew up, and violence breeds violence. And I know enough about psychology that if I'm around someone who starts getting hostile, a lot of times I can tell, not just with young people, but with this is not something new. Kansas City is a very, very violent place. But what I was about to say is I can quite often tell that their hostility is a part of their personality that developed at a very young age. The other thing, you know, talking about educating our children to do this and that, you know, that's a great idea. But from a pragmatic standpoint, a lot of the parents don't have the information or the maturity to teach their children a whole lot of anything. In my experience, my personal experience, and what I can see from other people, other black people, is the people who get somewhere are generally people who are capable of setting goals. You have to be able to set goals and figure out what you want to do in life, what you want out of life, and what you need to do to put yourself in that position, and then try your best to do it. Now, you may not be able to do it, or you may change your mind, but even if you can't do it, in all likelihood, you're going to be further along than if you don't try to do anything. One of the horrible problems in the black community, and of course gangs is a part of this, is there's this tremendous emphasis on conformity. And when, no matter what your age is, but particularly if you're a young person, you know, I'm talking about junior high school and high school age, and you're, you know, all you want out of life is being like the other young people around you, then you are going to end up in the lowest common denominator of achievement, because that's what the average person, average black person does. I think that the best thing anyone can do for their child, black or white, really, is to give them a sense that they can accomplish things that they want in life if they figure out what they want to do, figure out a trade or a profession, decide what you want to do, and try to do it. You hear you hear it from black people and white people who are successful. You hear, see these people on television saying, you can do anything you want as long as you put your mind to it. You know, well, I don't think that's true. I know it's not true. But you'll get further on. You know, you may change your goals, have to make some adjustments, but you're never going to get anywhere just trying to be like everybody else. And the violence in the black community in Kansas City, you know, I hope there's no place more dangerous than Kansas City, because you have these black kids killing black people for sport. They're driving around shooting up houses. Very often, they kill more babies than they kill adults, because in a lot of cases, the adults are on the second floor and the babies are in first floor bedrooms. And you know, there isn't a month that goes by in Kansas City where they're not talking about some 3 or 4 year old being killed in something that seems like a random drive-by. And that's what they do here. They have they do these drive-bys in cars. You know, you'll just, if you're in the wrong place, you just be driving along in your car, minding your own business. Somebody's going to pass you and just shoot up the car. And why are they doing this? They're doing this for sport, because it makes them feel important. You know, and this is one of the tragic aspects of children who are exposed to a lot of physical abuse, and which is totally common in the black community among younger and old people. You know, from it's intergenerational thing. It's still going on. And when people, have no accomplishments, see, everybody wants to think well of themselves. Everybody wants to think that they're down with it, that they're worthwhile, that they have, their life has some kind of meaning. And a lot of people, the only kind of way they have of feeling important is to feel that they can persecute or inflict pain on somebody else. That makes them feel important, you know, because they don't have anything else. And when you hear these gang members talking on some program, a lot of times, first of all, they're not repentant for the most part, but they find a great deal of excitement in what they're doing, the violence that you're doing, and they think that this makes them somehow important. And it's absolutely pathetic. But the first thing we have to do, you know, talking about taking on the white man and educating our own children and so forth, there's a lot of organizational things that can be done that's very helpful and beneficial. But you have to have self-motivation. That's what kids need. They have to have a sense of individuality. And without it, it's not, you know, I mean, all you're going to be is a follower, and followers tend to go to the lowest common denominator because that's the easiest to follow. Nobody's going to be a follower and decide to, black kid decide to be a doctor because they're a follower. You know, they're going to end up in the penitentiary because they're a follower. You know, that's what I have to say about it.
And also, they had another breaking news story today. The mayor of Chicago, Ron Emanuel, his chief of staff, which is a black man, was walking back. They had had a big meeting, and he was walking back to his car, and he got caught in a drive-by gang shooting, and he was shot in the head. And he's not, you know, they're not expecting him to live. So I wonder what they're going to do about that. Now, see, they'll go and try to do something about that, but what about all the other people that's losing their life?
How positive are they that it was a drive-by and not even an assassination? I don't call me a conspiracy theorist, because I'm not, and there's nothing abnormal about conspiracy, don't get me wrong, but I'm not advocating. But what makes, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of ways of doing things, and that sort of thing happens also. It's just a testament to the level of violence within this culture. It's as simple as that, man. It was born out of that, and it continues to be that.
Let me just ask, where did this happen?
Do you think a lot of our violence was learned? I heard someone say this. Do you think a lot of our violence was learned from the history of America?
Well, we were probably molded and affected by it. You know, you got to be affected by things that, you know, because of proximity. If you're close to something all the time, it's going to have an effect one way or the other. It's going to either turn you off to the point where you're going to say, I'm not going to do that, and somehow, or you're going to buy into it. One way or the other, you're going to be affected by your environment, and, you know.
A place like Canada, where there's probably as many gun owners per capita as in the United States, if not more, has under 500 murders a year. The United States has something approaching 10,000 murders a year.
Anybody that has movie channels, I was doing it last night. Go through the channels and look at the movies on there. There's graphic violence of people getting their heads blown off, chopped up.
And I think, too,
spoon-feds us that on a daily basis. Yeah, in the video games and everything. They're very graphic and everything. The subconscious is really a very mysterious but very powerful. It's very powerful. Things get in there. You don't even realize they're in there, and you might still be reacting, you know, from them. That's what I think it has a lot to do with. That and what David said about, you know, how people, we're so abusive violently, you know, raising our
our children and everything, man. It just, it's all, it's continually reinforced.
The
military provides it being reinforced from a standpoint of nationalism and whatnot, which is exactly what the fascists did in Germany. If you look at the way, I mean, seventh inning of every baseball game, we got to listen to God Bless America. Every sporting event, they got to do all. I mean, what does that have to do with sports? I came here to watch a football game. I'm not interested in standing up here and testifying about what a great American I am and saluting flags and all that foolishness.
Okay, before we cut off, let me give you these murder capitals here. Okay, the fifth one is Saginaw, Michigan. Number five. Number one is East St. Louis, Illinois. Number three is Gary, Indiana. And number two is New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, that's based upon something I quickly looked while you guys were talking. And so St. Louis, Illinois, which is East St. Louis, is the number one.
Well, that's just an out-and-out combat zone. What number does that come in?
Number one.
Yeah. Well, East St. Louis, which is probably where Ferguson is, is just incredibly
violent.
No,
that's not East St. Not that one. It's another. It's not that one. It's East. It's Illinois. It's really in Illinois. It's not.
It's Illinois.
It's like right over the bridge from St. Louis.
Right.
East St. Louis.
It's always been a violent, very violent place. That's nothing.
East St.
Louis
it's very small. It's really small too. It's hardly any people there, and so
it has always been that.
Here are some more. You got Baltimore on here. You got Detroit, and I'm not sure exactly where they fall, but yes, those are the top ones.
Yeah, and they always have been. Most of them.
Hey, if they're, you know, when you're talking about cities, you're not talking about ghettos. You know, Kansas City is quite a violent place, but the black ghetto area, which is large.
Okay, and here.
I mean, I don't think you could grow up there. You know, if you're a black male, I don't think you could grow up to adulthood without killing at least two people, you know, who would be trying to kill you. I mean, it is a life and death struggle to survive in a place like that. You might as well be in Beirut. And that's why it's totally normal for these young black males, they graduate from high school to the penitentiary. That's, you know, virtually normal.
Across
the city. That's normal.
Yeah. Hey, looks like we're about ready to cut off here, so thank you guys. And we can talk about this. Sounds like a really good one to follow up on for next week.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, because
okay.
I got a lot I can say.
Me too.
Let me say this. Let me get this in. Because I was really angry with my pastor telling that young lady not to go in the service.
Wow.
I don't blame you.
Well, I don't know how I think about
it. Well, it's something to think about. The incidence of rape of women in the military has gone up like a 1,200% or something. Man.
That's what I'm talking about.
Is anybody interested, familiar with the case of the sister that they raped and killed and claimed her father was a doctor? I forgot her name, man. It's on the internet. It's very interesting, but women are coming forward like crazy. My daughter wanted to join the Navy when she left high school, and I thought that was a good idea, and when she didn't, I was upset. I'm happy that she didn't now, because it's absolutely crazy. They're raping women and killing women. Our people are doing it, not the so-called enemy. It's something to think about. That's not to say there aren't benefits that you get out of joining the military, because of course there are. But you got to understand, it's like everything else. It could be a very dangerous proposition. You know,
it really can, and in the men, even they do the experimentations on them, and they have them, you know, just mind control stuff.
Well, I've read
stuff,
instances of men being raped too online.
Yeah.
I've seen instances. I mean, the military is just as corrupted as any other thing. Like everything
exactly.
within the society, it's just
exactly.
a microcosm of the society. People go, "Why did this athlete beat his wife and everything?" If they beat wives, if the civilian society beats wives, the NFL guys will beat their wives. Everything is just a microcosm of the society, and in American society, everything is a commodity. It's commodified also. Those people got to understand.
Military training is, I just like to say, military training involves, you know, these drill sergeants and so on. They use a lot of profanity. Their job is to be very humiliating, and a lot of their humiliation is very sexually oriented, and the whole military training atmosphere is highly sexually supercharged. Just like a lot of unions, men, you know, there's been complaints for decades and decades from women in New York City walking down the street, and these construction workers will make every kind of obscene comment. They have a contest among themselves about how obscene they can be, making comments to women, you know, on their lunch hour from work and so on, because that's their culture. And you know, it's a sexually supercharged culture that just naturally leads to these guys raping females if they're around, because that's the mentality that they're trained in.
On that note, we will pick that up on next week. Thank you all for calling in. We'll see you back. Same time, same place.